Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. Injections of Johnson & Johnson's single-dose coronavirus vaccine came to a sudden halt in much of the U.S. after federal health agencies called for a pause in the vaccine's use following the emergence of a rare blood clotting disorder in six recipients. All six were women between the ages of 18 and 48, and all developed the illness within 1 to 3 weeks of vaccination. One woman died and a second woman in Nebraska has been hospitalized in critical condition. All of the women developed the illness within about 1 to 3 weeks of vaccination, with a median time of 9 days. The Nebraska woman, who is now hospitalized, is in her late 40s and developed blood clots 2 weeks after her shot, state health officials said. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and the Food and Drug Administration on Tuesday, April 13th, issued an official recommendation to pause the use of Johnson & Johnson's COVID-19 vaccine, but what the agencies called an abundance of caution, citing a rare and severe type of blood clot that some individuals have experienced as a side effect following the single-shot dose. As of April 12th, according to a public statement by the two agencies released via Twitter, more than 6.8 million doses of the J&J vaccine have been administered in the United States. Of those, the agency said it is now reviewing data involving six reported U.S. cases of a rare and severe type of blood clot in individuals after receiving the vaccine. Right now, these adverse events appear to be extremely rare. The treatment of this specific type of blood clot is different from the treatment that might typically be administered, the agencies noted. As part of the review, the CDC will convene a meeting of the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, ACIP, to further review these cases and assess their potential significance. Until that process is complete, we are recommending this pause. This is important to ensure that the healthcare provider community is aware of the potential for these adverse events and can plan due to the unique treatment required with this type of blood clot, tweeted the FDA. Vaccine safety is a top priority for the federal government, the agencies added. And we take all reports of health problems following COVID-19 vaccination very seriously. Meanwhile, Mark D. Levine, a New York City councilman, lamented on Twitter that the pause would be a huge setback for the city's vaccination program, which he said relies entirely on J&J to inoculate the homebound, rich, small private doctor's offices and supply mobile vaccination vans. NYC now has the biggest messaging challenge yet in vaccination, he wrote. We have to do everything possible to avoid a collapse in confidence in vaccination overall. U.S. federal officials are concerned that doctors may not be trained to spot or treat the rare disorder if recipients of the vaccine develop symptoms of it. They said on Tuesday morning, April 13th, that a standard treatment for blood clots, use of an anticoagulant drug, could be dangerous or even fatal in such cases.
Around the world with reporters.
United States President Joe Biden has made a deal with Mexico, Guatemala, and Honduras to increase border security in order to prevent refugees from reaching the U.S. border. The leaders of Mexico and Guatemala criticized Biden for having initially sent compassionate messages that encouraged refugees to try and reunite with their families, only to find often brutal conditions and deplorable treatment at the U.S. border. Per capita, the U.S. accepts only a tiny amount of asylum seekers, and yet immigration appears to be the most talked about issue today. What's seemingly never discussed in the mainstream media is how U.S. foreign policy is so often the direct cause of the political instability and economic dysfunction which produces these regular refugee crises.
It feels odd to say even foreign policy, considering how deeply involved the U.S. has been in the development of Latin America, especially Central America, where a lot of these, you know, refugees and migrants are coming from. And this, you know, 100-year-long history is never addressed in the media. The wars in the 80s that Reagan waged against, you know, progressive governments and movements in Central America are never discussed. And even, like, extremely recent history, like the 2008 overthrow of the government in Honduras or the disputed 2017 election, are not discussed. And that is just recent history. It doesn't delve into, you know, the long history of colonialism, the Monroe Doctrine. People may have heard this in school, but they don't really understand what it means. It means the U.S. extracting resources from these countries. So it's no wonder that people would want to go from the areas the U.S. impoverished to the U.S., which has that wealth now.
Domestically, Republicans are being accused of fear-mongering about immigrants, while Democrats are being accused of using foreign immigration to distract from the unprecedented economic and health crises. The right to asylum is protected in international and U.S. law, but Biden appears to be following the same militaristic approach as his controversial predecessor, which many repeatedly called inhumane. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
Young black people have been hardest hit by unemployment during the pandemic, new research indicates. Over the past year, the UK jobless rate for young black people rose by more than a third to 35%, according to the Resolution Foundation think tank. That compared with a rate of 13% for young white people and a rate of 24% for young people of Asian descent. By the end of the year, unemployment among young black graduates had risen to 34%, up from 22% before the pandemic.
I graduated last year with a business degree, and I know COVID has, you know, really impacted the job market and all that stuff. But just being a black person as well, on top of that, it just makes things a lot harder.
Even if a black person has a degree and has just left university, they're finding it hugely difficult to get a job. And I think that's proof positive that Britain is a systemically racist society. Even in the year of 2021, we're seeing that time and time again, that the life chances, the opportunities available to black people are much worse than those available to the white population.
The findings follow the government's recent controversial report into race relations in British society, which claimed the UK does not suffer from institutional racism and should be a model for other white majority nations. Yet the research from the Resolution Foundation, along with other racial disparity statistics, paints a very different picture, which critics argue the government's report fail to acknowledge.
In the British capital, London, young black males were 19 times more likely to be stopped and searched than the general population, and were 28 times more likely to be stopped on suspicion of carrying weapons than the general population. Black people were 6.5 times more likely to be fined than white people for breaking COVID-19 regulations, and more than 4 times more likely to die from COVID-19 than white people.
Black Britons, African Caribbeans and Asians face systemic racism. They're 9 times more likely to be stopped and searched by the police. As women, 3 times more likely to die in childbirth. Were 60% of the doctors and nurses and health frontline workers who died at the very beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. And for the government's report to say that institutional racism doesn't exist is just a kick in the teeth.
Foundation's findings expose that COVID had widened already existing gaps between the UK's ethnic groups, and they've urged for special efforts to ensure that young people from hard-hit ethnic backgrounds had access to quality education, training options, and where needed, financial support for full-time study. But many will feel the government may not have the remedy for this issue while they refuse to accept the diagnosis, systemic racism. Ahmed Kabbella, London.
As the fasting month of Ramadan arrives, Afghans happily welcome it with honor and pride. In the meantime, poverty and low control over prices in the market by the government are major problems that poor families are facing. That is why they call on responsible bodies to take strict measures in order to control the market during the holy month.
We want businesses to think about difficulties of the poor during the fasting month of Ramadan. Government bodies also need to fully control food prices and prevent sharp price hikes during Ramadan to help poor families and individuals.
Fasting Afghans also see this month as an opportunity for not only to strengthen their bonds with God, but also to further help and support the underprivileged in society. That is one of the fundamental teachings of Islam.
This is a religious and humanitarian responsibility of every single Muslim to help poor people, especially orphans and widows who have no breadwinner, and Ramadan creates opportunities for us to fulfill our responsibility in this regard.
Besides other challenges, the COVID-19 pandemic in Afghanistan is also a problem on the way of fasting Afghans. This is because they religiously organize big gatherings during the holy month each year. The continuation of terrorist attacks and bombings during the fasting month of Ramadan is one of the other headaches for Afghans, especially for military forces who are either in the front lines or inside their posts and bases across the country. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Iranian Deputy Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi announces Iran's decision to increase the level of uranium enrichment from 20 to 60% and to install an additional 1,000 centrifuges at its Natanz facility, the target of a recent act of sabotage. Araghchi broke the news upon arriving in Vienna for another joint commission meeting aimed at reviving the nuclear deal. He said the International Atomic Energy Agency has been informed.
We just sent a new letter to the agency saying that we would start from tomorrow enrichment up to 60%. And that is for Iran needs to produce certain radio isotopes needed for certain medical treatments.
Araghchi said the damaged centrifuges in Natanz would be replaced by more advanced ones, and that things would go back to normal there in the coming weeks. Signatories of the nuclear deal are expected to meet in Vienna on Thursday as negotiations continue. Iran insists that all US sanctions should be lifted and their removal verified before it goes back to full compliance.
We believe that this round of negotiations is the time for the US to present the list. And I hope that I can go back to Tehran with the list of sanctions which should be lifted. Otherwise, I don't believe we can continue like this. Otherwise, it would be a waste of time, actually. So let's see.
Informal discussions have already begun here with the hope of reaching an agreement on the list of U.S. sanctions that need to be lifted, after which Iran says it will discuss the verification process. Homolesky, Vienna.
Lining up for donated clothes and a warm meal. More than 100 men who have survived Western-backed wars in the Middle East and Africa and a death-defying journey to get to the UK. A former bank employee, Keenan, is a Syrian asylum seeker living in temporary accommodation in the Welsh city of Cardiff.
I didn't leave my country in the first 5 years of the war. I left after 8 years and a half. I tried and did my level best to stay in my home country and not being a refugee. Refugee is not a good thing to be. It's not an option.
Before Cardiff, this father of one and his fellow asylum seekers had been housed in a dilapidated army barracks in the coastal village of Penali. Economics graduate Fateh worked as a risk analyst in his home country.
When I first came here, I had no idea about military camps, but we put into camps and it was a horrible experience.
The UK government says it takes the well-being of asylum seekers extremely seriously, and any abuse is completely unacceptable. But the organizer of the welcoming event in Cardiff, who has also spent a lifetime combating racism, believes the government has failed to live up to its obligation.
Without a shadow of a doubt, they failed. They failed miserably. Some of the initial accommodation is abysmal. We have seen people rehoused in shared houses where they have to share one bathroom, one kitchen with dangerous kitchen facilities.
After surviving the dangerous journey to Europe, they were greeted with this: far-right protests in Dover last year.
Here in Cardiff today, an act of kindness and compassion towards asylum seekers who come here from far and wide, from the Middle East and Africa, among them doctors and engineers. Contrast this with the kind of hostility and hate they have been receiving from some people who think that their country is under invasion by irregular immigrants.
One of the consequences of coronavirus has meant the country's already overloaded asylum application system has ground to a halt, leaving these men living a life of wait and see.
Many people have been living here in limbo, not knowing when their asylum process is going to be progressed. And of course you have some people here who are separated from their family. They have family.
Britain remains the fifth most favorite European destination for refugees and asylum seekers, way behind Germany, France, Spain, and Greece. Keenan and other refugees and asylum seekers have survived war and the perilous voyage here, but their journey to call it their new home is yet to end. Saeed Pourreza, London.
While millions of Yemenis are suffering from a severe fuel shortage due to Saudi Arabia's continued seizure of oil ships, an Emirati oil tanker named Saga has arrived at Bir Ali port in Shabwa in eastern Yemen to transport 115,000 tons of Yemeni crude oil to the UAE.
Oil smuggling carried out by the Saudi-led coalition in southern and eastern provinces has cost Yemen more than $7 billion over the past 2 years. Annually, more than 14 million barrels of crude oil are being smuggled illegally through several ports in Shabwa province, which is under the control of Saudi Arabia.
Meanwhile, Yemen's petroleum company says another oil tanker named Apollitaris is on its way to Deba port in Al Mukalla to move more than 300,000 tons of oil to an unknown destination.
Yemen is being systematically plundered by Saudi Arabia. An estimated $145 million of oil income is being looted monthly. Recently, an Emirati ship arrived at Shabwa port to plunder 1 million barrels of crude oil, and there is another ship coming from China to transport over 2 million barrels of crude oil.
Yemenis have been suffering from a harsh shortage of fuel due to the continued detention of 10 patrol ships by Saudi Arabia. While the vessels are inspected and authorized by the UN through verification and inspection mechanism.
Yemenis say plundering their oil is an illegal act that reveals the real reasons for the years-long war on their country by Saudi Arabia and its allies. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
It was a pitched battle in garrison city of Rawalpindi near Pakistan's capital Islamabad. The violent clashes erupted after what protesters blamed the government to have backed out of its agreement with them to expel the French ambassador to Pakistan over the repeated incidents of public display and republication of blasphemous cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. Many died and dozens of others injured from the both sides in the clashes after the protesters blocked the major railways and road links. Protesters claimed that at least 10 of their companions were killed and over 100 were arrested by the police.
This government doesn't care about the dignity of our Prophet. Obviously, people take to the streets to show their anger. We gave the government 5 months to expel the French ambassador, but they did not expel him. We will continue our protests until our demand is met, which is the expulsion of French ambassador.
Pakistan has a history of similar violent protests over the frequent incidents of blasphemy of the Prophet under the guise of freedom of expression in the West. Protecting the honor of the Prophet is the most sensitive issue in Pakistan, which attracted millions of people on the roads in the past.
Sending the French ambassador back may be a kind of a step which again could provide an immediate relief as far as the domestic political scene is concerned, but that is not going to solve the problem. Today it is France, tomorrow it will be another country. And so we need to be having a comprehensive campaign.
Pakistan has been under pressure from Paris-based anti-money laundering outfit, the Financial Action Task Force, which placed Pakistan on a grey list a few years ago on the charges of terror financing. Now Pakistan needs French support together with other countries to come out of the grey list, because of which Islamabad is reluctant to expel French ambassador. However, rising anti-French sentiments in Pakistan are leaving little option with the government but to expel French ambassador. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
Restaurateurs, gym owners and business people from various other industries have continued to stage protests across Italy demanding the government to immediately lift the ban on their activities. A protest dubbed Io Apro, I Open, was staged in central Rome. Hundreds of angry business people tried to head towards the parliament building but were met by police in riot gear and had to detour to nearby San Silvestro Square. Here they shouted, "Freedom and let us get back to work," with some hurling smoke flares and other objects.
Under Italy's current red and orange zone restrictions, restaurants remain closed at night and are open for takeaway only during the day, whereas swimming pools and fitness centers are closed all day.
We are exasperated by the situation and by the way the police treat us. This is just repression. They do not even allow us to demonstrate. The government must let us return to our work. We have lost 60-70% of our earnings.
The protest turned nasty when protesters infiltrated by alt-right activists and professional organizers of social unrest threw firecrackers and objects at police. Officers charged the protesters after they tried to breach a police cordon.
The government keeps ignoring us. My shop has been closed since October, but the rent and all bills must be paid anyway. How can we continue this way? I am afraid some people will resort to extreme acts.
Meanwhile, restrictions were eased across most of Italy after six regions were downgraded from red to orange on Monday. However, Prime Minister Mario Draghi has said Italy will have no moderate risk yellow zones this month in an attempt to keep the spread of the virus down while his government tries to step up a much-delayed vaccination campaign. Max Civili, Rome.
Increasing the number of...
Boris Johnson is the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. That is a fact. But according to a senior former British civil servant, Philip Reitcroft, the COVID-19 pandemic has seeded the idea of a Prime Minister who speaks for England alone. In a study looking at the issues of devolution from inside the UK state machinery, the former permanent secretary to the Brexit department stated that the 300-year-old union is in deep peril due to no defined strategy by Westminster.
In the context of COVID, where each of the constituent nations' devolved governments are essentially self-governing, this has inculcated a sense that Britain is not a unified nation, the UK is not unified, and it's never been more divided and never been more angry. And to all intents, I think it's fair to say that Boris Johnson, at least unofficially, is the Prime Minister of England only. He doesn't seem to care about the union.
The crisis has been exacerbated amid growing momentum for a second referendum on Scottish independence, with a recent poll showing that pro-independence parties would win 79 of 129 seats in Holyrood in the upcoming elections. Moreover, there's also a growing independence movement in Wales that will add to Westminster's woes. Meanwhile, in Northern Ireland, there's been a serious deterioration of relations between the nationalist and loyalist communities following the implementation of the Brexit deal, which has resulted in some of the worst street violence to have taken place in recent years.
I think Northern Ireland has been used as a pawn. It's been used as a pawn by the British government. It's been used as a pawn by the European Union.
The report, co-authored by Professor Michael Kenny, claimed it was political decision-making made by Westminster mixed with a lack of consultation with dissolved governments and confused messaging that has caused widening divisions, with Reitcroft claiming that Boris Johnson's muscular brand of unionism had asserted the value of the union rather than demonstrating it.
Boris Johnson and his crew of hard-right ideologues have substituted flag-waving British nationalism for clear-headed policy designed to make people in different parts of the UK feel they're part of something united rather than increasingly polarised. And when the flag waving starts, the thinking stops. And when the thinking stops, the road to ruin is set. And this UK is on a road to ruin.
The warnings laid out in this new report are stark. Unless there's a change in strategy from Downing Street, then the future of the United Kingdom as four nations, England, Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland, is in doubt. Ahmed Kabbalah, London.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily around the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 15:20 to 16:20 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 19:20 to 20:20 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat, or BAT 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/EN. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
The Limelight.
A British children's charity is accepting money made from human rights violations in Palestine. The National Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children, NSPCC, has taken more than £5 million, that is approximately $6.9 million, from bulldozer manufacturer JCB. JCB is currently being investigated for war crimes carried out in the occupied Palestinian territories. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Sharon Green, journalist. This article is published under the heading, Major UK Charity Accepts Dirty Money Linked to Human Rights Violations in Palestine. Stay tuned, please, for the details of this article. British children's charity is accepting money made from human rights violations in Palestine. Campaigners affiliated with the UK branch of the Israeli Committee Against House Demolitions, ICAHD UK, claim. The National Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children, NSPCC, has taken more than £5 million, that is approximately $6.9 million, from bulldozer manufacturer JCB. JCB is currently being investigated for war crimes carried out in the occupied Palestinian territories. An Israeli company, Comasco, buys the dozers, which are then distributed to the Israeli regime forces and to civilian contractors. They are then used to carry out the Zionist regime's twin policies of ethnic cleansing of Palestinians and the settlement of Jews on stolen Palestinian land. Both policies are grave violations of the Fourth Geneva Convention. A small group of activists went to the London headquarters of the NSPCC on Tuesday, April 6th, to hand in an 1,800-strong petition. A longtime supporter of Palestinian human rights and rights said the NSPCC was founded to prevent cruelty to children, but it takes money from JCB, which derives profits from inflicting cruelty on Palestinian children. It doesn't make sense. The dozers have demolished houses and tents, clinics and schools, and have ripped up hundreds of thousands of fruit trees in Palestine, she added. JCB is only one of three British companies so far identified by the UN as profiting from the Israeli regime's occupation of Palestinian land. lawyers for Palestinian human rights have succeeded in the first stage of calling the company to account for its human rights abuses under Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD, regulations. These little ones are traumatized by watching their homes bulldozed while their parents look on helplessly. Dozers also rip up olive and other fruit trees, so the whole family is plunged into poverty for good measure. Wright said, adding, "We think the NSPCC should sever its link with JCB." Meanwhile, activists from Sheffield and elsewhere, part of the coalition, which includes the Palestine Solidarity Campaign, protested outside JCB's world headquarters in Staffordshire. Protester Natalie Flip said, "JCB is a highly profitable global company. It could cease trade with its Israeli dealership with a scarcely a dent in its profits. Yet, it chooses not to. It chooses shamefully to ignore the trauma inflicted on hundreds of Palestinian children." The Bamford family, JCB owners, hypocritically pride themselves on their supposed support for children's welfare, most publicly through their financial support for the NSPCC. These events are only the latest in the campaign, which is a powerful coalition built over 2 years from tiny beginnings. Three women started it, forming themselves into protecting Palestinian families. The UK branch of the ICAHD backed them, closely followed by Social Work Action Network, the UK Palestine Mental Health Network, the Shoal Collective, and the Palestine Solidarity Campaign. The Zionist regime army regularly conducts incursions into the buffer zone area in Gaza, including entering with bulldozers and heavy equipment in order to raise vegetation, flatten roads, and expose the terrain. The Zionist regime has baselessly claimed that this activity is necessary for security reasons. Figures released by Al-Mizan indicate that between January and August 2020, the Israeli regime invaded Palestinian farmland near Gaza's perimeter fence on 34 occasions.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Ayatollah Khamenei's opinion on the blessed month of Ramadan.
Fasting is a divine gift that Allah the Exalted has bestowed on believers. The late Haji Mirza Jawad Malik Tabrizi, the famous Islamic mystic, says in his book Al-Muraqibat, that fasting is a divine gift that Allah the Exalted has bestowed on believers and His servants. He says, fasting is not an obligation, rather it is an honor for which we should be thankful to God. Fasting, which is the sign of God's respect for His servant, is something which we should appreciate, for which we should be thankful to God. He mentions many benefits for the thirst and hunger of the month of Ramadan, which believers consider themselves obligated to tolerate. He extracted these benefits from Islamic narrations, and the knowledge originated from the enlightened heart of this great man. Among the most important benefits is that this hunger and thirst give the heart a kind of purity which prepares the ground for thinking, and 1 hour of thinking is better than years of worship.
رمضان يا شهر القرآن فيك أذوق حلاوة الإيمان لا لا تنقضي أنت للروح دواء رمضان 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 يا حبيب رمضان ليتك دوما قريب
Ramadan is the month of penitence. Among the characteristics that have been mentioned for the month of Ramadan, what particularly attracts my attention is the month of penitence. I would like to discuss this point with you government officials. Penitence means going back when you realize that you're treading the wrong path, doing the wrong thing and cherishing the wrong thought. It means turning back to Allah the Exalted. This penitence has a meaning that is inherent to it. Going back means that we should find out where the problem lies and identify the path that is wrong. This is a very important point. As we move along, we often tend to turn a blind eye to the mistakes we make and to our faults. We fail to notice the problems that plague our work. This happens in our individual responsibilities as well as our collective responsibilities, involving our nation, our party, our movement, or our camp. We often ignore the problems with everything that is related to us. Therefore, other people should point out our flaws.
Alhamdulillah, Alhamdulillah, all praises to
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
the month of God. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam and welcome to the program. We are with you with another episode of the special series for Ramadan. Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, says, if the servants of God were aware of the blessings and realities of Ramadan, they would wish the entire year would be Ramadan. He also says, indeed, the gates of sky are open in the first night of Ramadan and will not be closed till the end of the month. Ramadan is the month of further acquaintance with the Noble Quran to benefit from this heavenly book. Imam Baqir, the fifth infallible successor of Prophet, peace upon him, says, everything has a spring, and the spring of the Quran is the month of Ramadan. The Noble Quran has been called, in the words of the Prophet and the infallible Imams, and also the Quran itself, as a light, remedy, truth, guidance, criterion, and so on. In view of this, close acquaintance and companionship with the Quran is in fact companionship with light and truth. This requires knowing it and being in constant contact with it. This will result in calm and serenity. Obviously, this has a meaning beyond merely recitation of the Quran, although recitation has its own impact and is considered as the first step for understanding the Quran. Companionship with the Quran should result in improvement of behavior and acquisition of moral virtues. The blessed month of Ramadan is the best opportunity for this purpose, as it is the month in which this heavenly book has been revealed. In Islam, fasting is divided in four categories: obligatory, recommended, disapproved, and forbidden. The most famous obligatory fasting is the fasting of the month of Ramadan, which every mature Muslim should observe it. Recommended fasting includes many days in year, but the 2 months of Rajab and Shaban are famous in this regard. Disapproved fasting is the fasting of the day of Ashura, or 10th, of the Islamic month of Muharram. And finally, forbidden or haram fasting is the fasting of Eid al-Fitr, feast of fasting after the end of Ramadan, and Eid al-Adha, that is the feast of sacrifice on 10th of the Islamic month of Dhul-Hajjah. In addition to the fasting of the blessed month of Ramadan, there is obligatory fasting in other conditions too. Fasting of atonement and fasting on behalf of one's deceased parents are two kinds of obligatory fasting. Fasting is obligatory for a person who is healthy enough. If he or she is sick or becomes sick as a result of fasting, it is forbidden for him or her. If the doctor says that fasting is harmful for one's health, while he or she knows, through experience, that it is not, he or she should fast. On the contrary, if the doctor tells one that fasting is not harmful for him or her, while he or she knows, through experience, that it is, he or she shouldn't fast. In Ayah 60 of Surah Ghafir of the Noble Quran, God has expressly said that He answers anyone who calls Him. He says, "And your Lord has said, call me, and I will answer you. Indeed, those who are disdainful of my worship will enter hell in utter humility." If the heart becomes familiar with the remembrance of God, God will undoubtedly answer his prayer. But how should we call God? We are servants, and God is the Lord of the entire universe. Anyone who refuses to worship God will enter hell with humility. It is narrated from the infallible Imams that they said, "Worship for the fear of hell is the worship of slaves. Worship for the sake of paradise and rewards of hereafter is the worship of merchants. But worship out of gratitude towards God is the worship of free people." The seventh infallible Imam and successor of the Prophet, Imam Musa Kazem, peace upon him, has taught us a supplication which is recited after every daily obligatory prayer in the month of Ramadan. He says, "My God, in this year and every year till the end of my life, and as long as I am in comfort and ease, grant me the pilgrimage to your sacred house, Holy Kaaba, and do not deprive me of reaching and visiting the noble places and pilgrimage to the tomb of your messenger. May your greetings be upon him and his progeny. My God, help me in all my needs in this world and hereafter. My God, I ask you, among the ordained affairs that have been definitely determined in the night of Qadr and will not be returned or changed, to place me among the pilgrims of your sacred house, the pilgrims whose Hajj is accepted, whose effort is praised, whose sins are forgiven, and whose evil deeds are expiated. And grant me long life in the way of your servitude, and provide me with ample sustenance, and pay my trust and debts."
Today. Iran has been subject to verification since the JCPOA signing in 2015, and constant checks by the UN's nuclear watchdog, the IAEA, have verified 15 times that Iran has been in compliance with that deal. But the tables have turned. Iran got barely anything more than promises for its compliance. Now, it will return to full commitment only if the U.S. lifts sanctions off this country in one sweeping move. It has agreed to nothing else. It may mean leaving with nothing for both sides, but Iran is adamant it's not going to get bitten again. It insists this time this country will be doing the verifying. It will verify sanctions have been lifted, and only then will it start reversing back into its nuclear commitments to the deal. So far, Iranian strategy has at least gotten the U.S. seriously thinking, even perhaps contemplating taking the first step to revive the JCPOA, or Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, also known as the Iran nuclear deal. I'm Leila Faramarzi. Iran Britain's adamance in performing checks and balances before recommitting stems from a profound distrust for the US. The US earned this distrust on several occasions, even before the 1979 Islamic Revolution, when Iran and America were still fast friends. Mr. Abolfat is a political analyst, one of the best at national TV, so you can imagine his all-round detailed vision of matters in his domain. Let's hear his take at Press TV Studios.
Would things have been any different if the Shah were in place, the friend of America? Because even then, they wouldn't have allowed us nuclear technology.
There have been many indicators that the Americans were taking measures to prevent Iran from acquiring peaceful nuclear technology. Americans themselves did not engage with Iran, but the Germans signed a contract to build the Bushehr power plant. They did their utmost to ensure that Iran wouldn't advance past a certain point. Evidence suggests if it wasn't for the 1979 Islamic Revolution, Americans wouldn't let Iran acquire peaceful nuclear technology.
Mr. Izadi is professor of international studies. He often comes up with the unexpected, but with logical reason attached. It was worth the trek out into center-west Tehran.
What lessons would you say Iran's JCPOA experience with the U.S. has borne for the world?
The point that Biden and people like Antony Blinken were making before they got into office about Trump leaving the agreement is actually true. But if countries realize that you make an agreement with one administration, and once that administration leaves, the agreement is nullified by the next administration, no one is going to be able to make any agreements with the United States. So U.S. says that it's an important country, but when it comes to international agreements, it acts like a banana republic.
Even before the Trump administration's reimposition of secondary sanctions in May 2018, after they unilaterally pulled out of the nuclear deal, Iran was not receiving the full benefits of sanctions relief. The main impediment was that major banks were reluctant to facilitate transactions or provide financing for Iran-linked projects. So most major deals signed with a vision of the JCPOA working hit a roadblock. Iran had placed orders for Boeing and Airbus aircraft, had attempted joint ventures with automakers Peugeot and Renault and Daimler. It had struck energy deals with Total and CNPC and rail projects with Siemens and Alstom. But even before Trump, a shady Republican, was elected to office, they lost faith in the nuclear deal and Iran's economic stability. As expected, they thought it too risky to venture into Iranian waters. Mr. Ajorlu is editor-in-chief of Mosallas magazine. He generously welcomed us to review and weigh the JCPOA's chances with us.
You see, in the past 4 or 5 years, Europe has talked about INSTEX and the revival of the JCPOA. Mr. Rouhani downplayed the importance of the matter, saying that the P5 plus 1 has turned to P4 plus 1. But we don't look at the issue optimistically. In the past 2 or 3 years, we have witnessed the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani and Mr. Fakhrizadeh. There has also been the recent incident at Natanz. We can't take these lightly just because we are negotiating with Europe. Europe is basically powerless.
Former U.S. President Trump renewed Iran's distrust in 2018, not just by pulling out of the deal and comically reimposing U.N. sanctions. As Iranian Foreign Minister Zarif put it, the U.S. had imposed, reimposed, or relabeled some 1,600 sanctions on Iran, inflicting $1 trillion worth of direct and indirect economic damage on this country. In fact, Trump's scorched-earth sanctions policy has done everything to make it impossible for President Biden to return to the JCPOA. At least, that's what it aimed for.
We don't know if Biden wants to, because Biden generally belongs to the right wing of the Democratic Party. He's very close to the Israelis, and whether he wants to go back to JCPOA is very much in doubt.
If there's any chance the JCPOA...